You were born in Lubumbashi in the Democratic Republic of Congo, and you live in Graz. You made some good points yesterday about this beautiful city in Austria. You write poetry, prose, theater plays, and librettos for opera, and you teach African literature at the University of Graz. Your debut novel is called Tram 38, which is about the single nightclub in a rundown African city and people meeting up there. And, written, as the publishing house says, in a John Coltrane sound. And in your most recent novel, Tanz der Teufel, you even push that the style of yours, which uses music, a lot of rhythm, even further. And it's even more political, placed in the borderlands between Angola and Congo, where you have different people dancing together. And we learned last night when and how you actually started to become a writer, because it was very closely connected to your freedom to become a European. And now we're looking forward to your essay.
You know, madam, I'm not a sorcerer. I'm not a peddler of dreams. I'm not a visionary, much less a prophet. Admittedly, this is a long story with multiple branches, but I swear to you on my father's life, I'm not losing my grip. Africa is not a country. It is a continent made up of 55 nations. My name is not Jean-Paul Sartre. I'm Mwanza Mujila, a Bloc originally from Congo-Kinshasa. My big bro, Alain Mabankou, is Congo, from Congo-Brazzaville. My country is located in the heart of Africa. I was born in a territory that exists only on paper, or shall we say, in a country that no longer existed. Until 1997, the Congo bore the name of Zaire. I grew up during the era of Mobutu's dictatorship. My parents were born during the colonial period. My grandparents were a colonized people. My great-grandparents were also colonial subjects. To tell the truth, my ancestors belonged to Leopold II. It is not the beer making me dizzy. Look at me. My head isn't spinning. From 98 until its independence, Congo had the status of Belgian colony. Long before this episode, beginning on the sidelines of Berlin Conference, it serves as the personal property of the King of the Belgians. Everything belonged to him, the forest, the volcanoes, the animals, and the population who were made to labor, sometimes without earning a single penny, on the plantation, railways, mines, and in the building of roads. My grandparents, on both my father's and mother's sides, were among those who left to search for work in the southern parts of the country, in the mines of Katanga. They found what they were looking for. Decades of after colonization, the Congo remains a place where international economic interests look on with civil order. You know, madam, for the last 20 years, the eastern part of this country has been in the grip of a so-called low intensity war fought over the extraction of minerals such as coltan. Some serious reports evoke a death toll of 6 million, nearly four displaced persons, without numbering the rapes, malnutrition, and poverty. These are no merely figures. Beyond this aberrant accounting are children, women, pregnant women, men, both aged and young, who have succumbed to the bullets, grenades, and machetes. Picking up my pen means to write in the background of this various tragedy. They help me remain sensitive to the image sent back to us by the world. How many children toil on the plantation? How many children labor in the mines? How many children are dying in the Ukraine? How many children have died in Iraq, in Libya, in Afghanistan? It's quite possible that I wouldn't have become a writer if I didn't be born in Central Africa. As far back as I go in my childhood to speak of colonization or even of the somber years of Mobutu Sankman regime was taboo in the family. When I used to ask my grandparents what their life had been like during the colonial period, they ducked my question or gave a retort. Go buy me a beer. Colonization is for adults. You are too curious, my boy. Did they think they were protecting us by concealing the truth? Were they ashamed of their lives during this era? Were they traumatized? Madam, I can't answer on their behalf. They are dead together with their pasts. You know, madam, my first contact with literature was of an utilitarian nature. When I began to write out my first text, I understood immediately that I could put on paper years of prohibition, silence, amnesia, and censorship. I realized that I could bear witness. Literature arose in my sight like an incredible space of freedom and a sanction to summon the living and the dead, the hangmen and the victims. You know, madam, books are gigantic reservoir of memory. I could imagine another scenario for the same event without a guilty conscience or the feeling of having missed the mark. My English is very boring. I could try to palpate the unsable, name the forbidden, name the city, cemetery, criminal underbelly, the invisible world, rename sand and symbols. You know, madam, a poem is a country. It can recount 1,000 years of story. You know, madam, a poem can offer asylum to those that vida history has driven out with transient blows, hunted down or banished. You know, madam, a poem can offer a burial. You know, madam, book make read on amnesia. They redeem us from oblivion, from dementia and the torpor of mining. I swear to you on the life of my paternal aunt. Book builds bridge between languages, country and cultures. They make journey and travel possible between the most distant points. You know, madam, through the power of the word and literature, even simple and insignificant things rise in value. You know, Madame, writers do not write just for themselves, but also for future generations, for the living and the dead. Literature is what remains after the tornado and the fear. Literature has no borders. Do doubt it, Madame. You know, Madame, sometimes I write, sometimes I don't. Sometimes I believe in literature power. Sometimes I doubt its potential. My ears have seen things. My ears have heard things. You know, Madame, I understand that the writer has the right and the duty to speak of wars, curses, malaria, motorcycle accident, depression, and deforestation. The world is to be sure screened up, yet awash in the sunlight. The writer also has the right and the duty to describe the wildlife, the mountains, or the rivers that spill into the ocean. What is literature? Perhaps a long light interlude of bird song, a swamp, a train coming into the station. Could literature be no more than writing in a world where sandscapes abound and where our years are overtaxed? You know, Madame, no all writers need dress in the same fashion, drink the same brand of beer, share the same writing style or lifestyle. If it were so, the anguish would be hideous, immense. You know, Madame, I wasn't born in Japan. I wasn't born four times in eight different countries. We always express ourselves from a place, really or imagined, and this place is the starting point for our singularity and, by extension, our humanity. We write using our sensibility, our subjectivity, our feelings, and our genealogical or cultural backgrounds. For about 15 years, I have lived in Osea. I observe the world from Lubumbashi, my birthplace, and from Graz, my current city of residence. You know, Madame, I write in a former colonial language, in the languages of others, in the language in which my grandparents were tricked, betrayed, sold off. The literary act makes this language cleaner. You know, Madame, languages are minings, and writing is the extraction from them of copper, cobalt, and diamonds. Writers are speleologists. Some languages are savory on the tongue, other sweet, other bitter, other tastes like papa, papa, papa. You know, Madame, I'm not a sorcerer. I'm no peddler of dreams. I'm not a visionary, much less a guru.